Right now, it's time for our weekly news update with WPR's Assistant News Director, Noah Ovshinsky. On the docket today, new wolf hunt numbers from the DNR, a look at what a Utah ruling could ultimately mean for Wisconsin's recent gay marriage ruling, and the latest update in John Doe. Noah, welcome to Central Time.
It's good to be here. Good afternoon.
We're going to start with some news from the attorney of Francis Schmitz. Tell us what's going on there in this relates to the John Doe case.
Right. So this was a bit of an unexpected turn yesterday, considering how little we've actually heard from the special prosecutor in the John Doe case. But yesterday, the attorney for Francis Schmitz, who is a special prosecutor, released a statement in which he essentially urged people not to jump to conclusions based on the highly publicized documents that were released last week by a judge. Those documents, as you might remember, alleged that Governor Walker was at the center of a criminal scheme to bypass state election laws during the recall elections of 2012.
So he's essentially urging people not to jump to conclusions. So what did the statement essentially say?
Well, basically what this attorney is saying, that these legal documents were basically documents outlining the prosecutor's legal theory, nothing more. They did not, according to Schmitz's lawyers, establish that a crime actually took place.
So I guess the big question is, why was this statement released?
I have to say, it's a bit unclear, Governor Walker's campaign seized on it immediately, urging the media to, quote, correct the record. The campaign also called on the Burke campaign, his opponent in the upcoming governor's election, to pull an ad that uses some of the media coverage that occurred last week after those documents were released.
And Burke said...
The Burke campaign said no. they're still going to air the ad.
So there's still some fuzziness about the statement that was issued and what exactly it is saying. Do we know what the distinction is that it's making between Governor Walker himself and Governor Walker's campaign?
Right. So it's worth noting that while the statement makes clear Walker was not a target of the investigation, at least at the time that the investigation was suspended, it doesn't say anything about Walker's campaign. So it's unclear whether or not Walker's campaign was a target of the investigation. The investigation, as we've talked about, was also suspended by a federal judge. So it's unclear what they would have found if it had continued. Of course, they may have found nothing. Maybe nothing would have happened. No charges would have been filed. But it's still an open question that this latest statement doesn't address. And of course, those special prosecutors are appealing in hopes of restarting that investigation. So to be continued for
so
sure.
So it's suspended for now, but we're going to keep an eye on it. And as we see things keep happening to keep it alive, including this statement from Francis Schmitz. So
yeah.
Going to keep watching that one. We're going to move to the DNR next and some new wolf numbers. What are we seeing there?
So the Natural Resources Board voted this week on this year's wolf hunting quota. Of course, this is an always controversial issue here in Wisconsin. They voted to allow 156 wolves to be taken. That's actually substantially lower than last year, when around 250 were killed during the hunt.
So quite a bit lower. What's the reaction then from hunters and others about that number?
Well, as you might expect, it runs the gambit. Some groups like the Humane Society were satisfied with the new quota simply because it was less than last year. Hunting groups, not so happy. They wanted this year's quota to be closer to something like 350 or so. So that number is right there in the middle between zero and 350.
So we went from 156. Well, we went from 250. That was last year's to 156 this year's. What accounts for the change?
I think the change reflects a few things. One is, wolf mortality rates in the last 2 years, that has informed what scientists have established as what would be a correct quota. And because also the hunt is still, it's really new. You know, we've only had this hunt, once. So the agency is still trying to figure out how it actually affects the population as a whole. So I think there's going to be a bit of trial and error in all of this. And I think this new quota reflects that.
Any sense that the winter you know, that we had, the dire winter that was, seems like it was more of Game of Thrones than Wisconsin winter, had anything to do with the wolf mortality numbers?
Well, I think that certainly played a part in the quotas. But of course, when you look at populations, you have to look at them over time. And so I think it remains to be seen. And of course, as the DNR learns more about how hunts affect the population, I think, you know, we could expect that that quota to, you know, maybe go up, maybe go down. We'll see what happens next year.
And one thing that has been a hot button issue around the wolf hunt, besides the wolf hunt itself, is the issue of using dogs. Where are we with that?
Right. So one of the things that won't change this year and wasn't addressed by the Natural Resources Board was the use of dogs. That is still allowed unless a court intervenes. Some folks spoke out against the practice of using dogs at the DNR meeting. The board heard from those folks, but it's not going to affect the rules governing this upcoming hunt.
Okay, and we're going to move on to something else that has been making a lot of headlines in Wisconsin, the gay marriage ban, which was struck down, the ruling recent there. We're going to look at that in Wisconsin via Utah. What are we seeing?
I know. Who knew? So we're going to leave Wisconsin for a bit. We're going to cross the Mississippi River because there was a major ruling in this ongoing court battle over same-sex marriage. The 10th Circuit Court of Appeals, in a 2-1 ruling just a day or so ago, upheld a previous ruling striking down the ban on same-sex marriage in Utah. And why is this significant? This is significant because this is the first time a federal appeals court has weighed in on the issue. Before this, they were all lower courts. This is an appeals court, which is, of course, one step closer to the U.S. Supreme Court.
And what exactly did they say?
So they cited the 14th Amendment, and I'm gonna quote directly from the ruling. They say, quote, the 14th Amendment protects the fundamental right to marry, establish a family, raise children, and enjoy the full protection of a state's marital laws. A state may not deny the issuance of a marriage license to two persons or refuse to recognize their marriage based solely upon the sex of the persons in the marriage union. That's directly from that ruling in the 10th Circuit.
So we've got the first appeals court that has ruled on this. As we know, the Wisconsin ruling is headed to a Chicago appeals court.
Right.
If we're trying to get a read on how that might unfold, what do you think? What does it portend?
Well, of course, this is a different set of judges. So, you know, there's no telling what they're going to rule. But I think for those people who are closely watching this, this is frankly a big ruling. It technically only affects... let me see. What are some of the states in the 10th Circuit? Utah, Colorado, New Mexico, Kansas, Oklahoma, and Wyoming. But, you know, I think people who are paying attention to this look at this as a positive, at least those folks who support gay marriage, look at this as a huge positive development.
So the Utah Appeals Court, the first, but it's not the only appeals court considering the issue. What other action are we seeing at the appeals level?
Right. So you mentioned that the appeals court here in Chicago is going to be considering the Wisconsin appeal. There are five other appeals courts actually around the country considering the issue. You know, so it's unclear if the Utah case or a different case is going to be the one that makes it up to the Supreme Court. But court watchers, everybody who really pays attention to this thing, expect fully one of these cases to eventually make it to the Supreme Court.
It's an interesting thing watching which one will be the one that makes that leap up.
Yeah, and at this point, it's we just don't know.
And I don't know, how soon do you think we might see something in the Supreme Court?
Well, as you know, I hate looking into the future, but I would say the high court could hear arguments in the case, I would say, at least as soon as 2015.
Okay, so maybe that soon, and something, not just something we're watching here in Wisconsin, the whole country is watching that.
Indeed.
Okay, we're going to move up to northern Wisconsin now and get a mine update. Some movement there with the tribes and something they're requesting from the EPA. What are we looking at there?
Right. So the tribes of northern Wisconsin are looking to, frankly, bypass the state government altogether because they haven't been impressed with the way state government has dealt with the mining issue. You know, of course, their goal is to stop this proposed iron ore mine in the Pinoki Hills. And so the Northern Wisconsin's Chippewa Federation sent a letter to the EPA asking the agency to stop all permitting activity in the Pinoki Range. And they were citing the danger it poses to the Lake Superior watershed.
So they sent a letter, and they're asking the EPA to stop permitting activity. What would that accomplish should the EPA respond? I mean, would it really essentially be able to get them to hopscotch over the state?
In a way, the tribes want the EPA to use the Clean Water Act to stop the mining. And there's some precedence to this. And I think this is what sort of prompted this letter or this most recent letter, because this is not the first letter the tribes have written to the EPA. The EPA just recently, citing Section 404C of the Clean Water Act, stopped, for now at least, stopped mining in Alaska, what would have been one of the largest copper, silver, and gold mines in the world. The EPA actually stopped, for now, that mine in Alaska. So I think the tribes here in northern Wisconsin would like the EPA to do the same here in northern Wisconsin.
So their sense is that there is a parallel here, that if it worked for the tribes in Alaska, we've got a similar argument here in Wisconsin.
Right. The mine opponents in Alaska argue that the mine would have destroyed like the $500 million commercial and sport fishery there. A lot of salmon spawn there. And so that's a crucial area for the fishery. And the tribes are essentially making, you know, a similar comparison to what might happen here in northern Wisconsin in the Lake Superior watershed. They argue that this mine, is a danger to the water resources up in northern Wisconsin.
Now, I know Mike Simonson typically follows this with NOAA, but do you happen to know if there's still blast sampling happening there?
I can't say for sure. I don't have an answer to that.
So the EPA has gotten this letter from the tribes. What about a reply? What kind of timeline do you think we're looking at here?
Right. So the tribes actually aren't expecting a reply necessarily to this letter. They are actually meeting in person with the EPA in late August or September, I believe in Chicago. And so I'm sure this letter will come up in that meeting.
So that's typically the way that this unfolds, that they send a letter, you don't get something back in the mail or a call, but they'll meet in person, it will be on the table, and everyone will know the issues at stake.
Exactly. So we'll see what happens in August or September. Again, only time will tell if the EPA will take action.
All right, Noah, thanks so much for coming by.
It was good to be here. Thanks.
We've been talking to Noah Ovshinsky, WPR's assistant news director. He joins us every week at this time for a look at state news.
I'm Mike Arnold in for Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Mike, were you a cool kid in middle school?
No. I was in the AV club. So
yeah, that pretty much killed
you
right there.
That pretty much locked me out.
Yeah, that's me too. There was no AV club at my school, but definitely not in the cool kids camp. So a lot of people interested in this news about cool kids and what it has to say later in life. Well, we're going to hear more about that. I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.